it's gonna hit all professions, that's for sure. But some professions sooner than others. They don't need to know design, they need to know how to design, but they don't need to do it themselves.
Welcome to PA Talks. Today, we're excited to host Aida Rasooli, an Iranian architect and visionary multidisciplinary designer. Aida stands at the forefront of integrating artificial intelligence with design, leading Celeste Design Studio. Her studio is a creative powerhouse known for its innovative approach to architecture, interiors, objects, and even fashion. Aida is also committed to sharing her knowledge and expertise. She collaborates with us at the Pacademy to inspire others about AI possibilities for creative processes. Join us as we delve into the creative mind of Aida Rasooli, exploring how her designs are shaping the future of architecture and beyond. Before moving ahead, let's take a moment and spotlight Pacademy, an online architectural educational platform dedicated to the exploration of parametric design, computational tools, and artificial intelligence in architecture. Pacademy serves as a bridge to advanced design techniques, fostering collaboration with pioneering architects and designers. Through the online courses at the Pacademy, we dive deep into the multifaceted world of computational design, engaging with a wide array of topics that push the boundaries of architecture. You can register and join the live workshops or watch the previous studio workshops recordings. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel and hit the bell notification so you don't miss any new uploads. So if you guys are ready, let's get into the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you for inviting me in Istanbul.
Thank you so much. It's good to have you in here. And yeah, your first time podcast, right?
Yeah. The first podcast I've ever been invited to.
That's great. So everyone will have the chance to get to know the face behind Celeste Design. Yeah. So how's Istanbul?
It's great. I expected it to be so much colder, but it wasn't. In Tehran, it's snowing. It's freezing, actually. But here, the weather was cool.
You know, the climate change, the seasons are switching. So 10 years ago in Istanbul, we had much colder winters. But yeah, so far it's end of February. We haven't seen any snow.
Yeah, really? Yeah, we didn't see snow in Tehran too. But when we were coming here,
it was snowing. Yeah, the whole Iran was really snowing, heavily, I think.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, my husband said in Yazd it's snowing.
Yeah.
it's a place where it never snows.
Really?
I believe so.
Oh, are you from Yazd?
No.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
I'm from Yazd.
Oh, you're from Yazd?
Originally.
I mean, you born there or?
No, my father even wasn't born there. My grandfather was born
there. Oh my God, I love Yazd. I haven't been there, unfortunately. That's a shame for me.
It's a very beautiful city.
Yes, but I think you've been there.
Yeah.
And also in some of your works, I see inspirations.
Yeah,
of...
you know, Eliana was checking my work. And when she saw my personal page, she said that I can really, you know, I can make the connection between the person and the work. And it makes your work makes much more sense when I see. And I have a lot of photos of Iran, the places I've visited. And, you know, I actually found that a lot of people are interested in knowing. And this was something I never thought was important because no one knew me at the beginning. A lot of people started asking, who are you? And they wanted to see the face. They wanted to know the face between the work.
That's PA's job, to uncover the masks. Yeah. You know, we did this for so many talented people.
Thank you.
So, yeah, that's great. You were talking about Eliana Negro?
Yeah, she's
so
great.
So she was also our instructor, and she was also actually our student. Then she became an instructor.
Really? Yeah. Yes. She's very nice. We became somehow friends, and we follow each other on our personal pages, my personal page, my work page, everywhere.
So let's get back to the beginnings. How did you become an architect, and where did this story begin?
You want me to go that far?
Oh, is it that far? Okay.
I think nearly 15, 16 years ago.
Okay.
It was 2008, I believe, I entered architecture school. And
then we're in the same age.
Yeah, we're okay. The same age. So yeah, I went to NODET. Do you know about NODET, National Organization for Development of Exceptional Talents in Iran? We call it Sampad. It's a school that very talented people are selected and go there. There's a like an entrance exam. Yeah, there's a filtration, and you study with people that like they're like you and they're on the same level. And yeah, a lot of the students were really into math and calculation and everything. Well, I was good at it. But I think it was around the 10th grade that I knew that I wanted to study architecture. I was really interested in it because it was somehow a blend of art and
engineering and science.
So yeah, I selected Iran University of Science and Technology in Iran. I studied my bachelor's there. And then I studied my master's degree at Shahid Beheshti University. Mm-hmm. And then I was really interested in, I'm a kind of architect that is interested in design in all levels, in all scales. Mm-hmm. Like I am into object design, but also in urban design. Mm-hmm, yes. Like in all scales, I'm interested in object design, I'm interested in interior design, architecture, urban design, urban planning even. And then after my master's degree, I decided to study a second master's in United States in urban planning. And I found it really fascinating to be with people, study with people who were not architects. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to be with people who were studying economics, had a background in economics, or maybe in art, or maybe in some other engineering. Actually, the programs were like this: they selected people from different backgrounds and they put them together. And yeah, I'm still like that. I find hanging out with non-architects more interesting. because I learn more from them. Mm-hmm. Architects, it's still essential to be with people who are in your area of expertise, but you can learn a lot from people who are not studying, not experts in the field that you are. So yeah, I had admission from some of the best universities in the United States and Canada, but my husband's visa was rejected, and
bad luck.
yeah, we tried so many times, and he tried for PhD, and after 1 year, I tried for a master's degree, but his visa was rejected, and I eventually decided not to go. And then I thought to myself, well, I'm staying in Iran because, when you don't know if you're leaving or you're staying, you're kind of in the, you don't know what you want to do. And it's a very bad situation. Well, I need to find out what I'm going to do and mm-hmm. which path I'm going to take. And it was really important to me to study the market and see where we're going. Mm-hmm. I had these questions in my mind always. Where are we going? Why are we going this way? And which path should I take? I like to study trends. I was actually observing the market, everything.
So what happened after the school? Like, you graduated in Iran and you started working.
Becoming a teaching assistant at university while I was working on an article, research papers with my professors. And at the same moment, I was applying. And then it was the year of Corona, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah, it was around that time. I said that I'm going to stay and I need to find out what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. And I want to create my path. I don't want to follow the path that everyone else is doing. So I started working freelance with a few of my friends and with one of my friends, actually. And we founded Celeste at that time. And I
Celeste, where does the name come from? Like, yeah, Celeste Design?
I'm telling you now. The name, actually, I didn't choose it. I'm actually terrible at picking names. And I spend a lot of time, waste a lot of time just finding a proper name. And I saw that we're wasting a lot of time just starting because we don't have a name. So I told her that just pick a name. I don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she chose Celeste, and I saw that it's beautiful. It's feminine. It's a feminine name. And okay, I said that okay, we're gonna start with it. We can change it later if we wanted to.
Oh, and changing then, name afterwards, impossible.
Yeah, and then but I didn't. I didn't know that these things were gonna happen. So we started freelancing, and then when AI came around, well, I knew that. We were gonna go through this path. I knew somehow that something like this was gonna happen in the near future. So I studied a lot about how AI is gonna change the world, how it's gonna impact the industries. And I am actually among the optimists. And mm-hmm. I think that it's gonna have a positive influence. Mm-hmm.
We're gonna get into that. Just tell me about Celeste.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, we chose the name and then we started growing really, really fast and it was unpredictable. And in the middle, I thought that maybe we should change the name because it's a feminine name. It's a girl.
What does it mean, Celeste?
It means galaxies, stars.
Celeste.
Yeah. And it's also the name of a music instrument, I believe.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's also a girl's, a feminine name.
Okay, okay. So, but so you founded Celeste with your friend somewhere in the middle of the way. You were thinking of changing the name. Then how? What happened? How did you get into AI? And what made you interested that you started using AI?
Yeah, well, I saw some images on social media mm-hmm. of people who were sharing their works, and I was really interested in knowing what I could do. I mm-hmm. wanted to see. It was like some, I can say, like some form of self-discovery. I wanted to discover myself because in the real world you will never have that creative freedom mm-hmm. that you have in a virtual world. I wanted to see if I were free of anything.
Mm-hmm.
If I were free to do whatever I wanted, what would I do? What mm-hmm. would I create? What would my work look like? I started working with it and sharing, and without any idea of what was going to happen in the future, just sharing. And I passed them through my filter. Like mm-hmm. If I liked them, I would share them. If I didn't like them, I would not share them. We decided to change the name. I talked to my father and I said that I've decided to change the name. He said, don't do it. It's working. It's something that works. You shouldn't change mm-hmm. it. But I said that no. And I was also, I wanted it to feel more architectural because it's not, Celeste, it's not an architectural name. But I also wanted it to be tangible. Like, I don't like intangible names that... When you say them, something, you know, comes to your mind. Celeste is like that. And we started testing names. I said that we're going to change the name. Okay, let's start selecting names. And mm-hmm. we came up with a list. And I looked at them. I didn't like any of them. And then I started typing. I said, okay, ChatGPT is my best friend.
Okay.
Let's, I asked ChatGPT about the name and I asked it that, what does the name Celeste, what senses and emotions does it represent?
Arise, yeah.
Yeah. And it gave me a list. I think I have it. Let me find it. That when I read the list, I saw, I think that felt that it's just, me, it's a really good reflection of me and what I stand for and what I'm trying to achieve. So let me find it.
And it also, it's like, it's better than having like Ida Rasuli.
Yeah,
studio.
Yeah. I didn't want it to be like something that
Celeste is much more than mine. I mean, you have your studio in our educational studio in our academy, but. It stays in mind.
Yeah. It's a tangible name. And I asked ChatGPT what feelings and senses is it associated with? And it said calmness, tranquility, serenity, lightness, hopefulness, joyfulness, heavenly, otherworldly. And a lot of people actually say that about my works. And they're ethereal, they're magical, mm-hmm. they're whimsical, they're actually all of them playful. They're playful, they're fantastical. And then I thought that, well, this name is a really great representation of what I stand for, then why should I change it?
Yes.
So I kept it, and I think it's actually, it reminds you of stars, galaxies, and... I don't know if you have noticed, but AI is actually it has been associated with like magic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like if you look at logos, they have a spark.
Yeah.
A lot of logos. AI is becoming associated with magic. And if you want to indirectly say that you're AI driven without actually saying it, I think that magical vibe can... somehow say that.
Yeah, but how do you generate these images? Do you have anything in mind before you start, or just does something come to your mind in verbs and words and or in visuals, then you try to visualize it in AI, or how does it work for you, or you just threw some words into AI and it just gives you unexpected stuff? We've spoke about these and a couple of the studios that you had with us in Academy, but I just want to maybe cover it a little bit more in sense of what is the thought process that you're putting into generating of each image.
I think what you do with Midjourney is not visualizing the actual thought, it's mm-hmm. visualizing the thought process.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tool that helps you develop a process and make a process. And I usually tell my students that when you want to start, it's really important that there is something clear and unclear about what you want. So when I want to start, I somehow know what I want, but I also somehow don't know what I want.
Mm-hmm.
Because that that ignorance gives you room for exploration and experimentation. And I'm a very curious person, and I'm an obsessive person. And I test 1,000 things before I choose one.
Uh-huh.
I really do that. And without this tool, I think... when I started first doing it, I thought, why didn't we have this in the first place? Why? Really, it's a very helpful tool for designers. I think it's a playground for designers. And mm-hmm. I don't understand why they would be afraid of it.
I mean, obviously, it removes some boundaries of using a tool or a 3D modeling tool to showcase a design or a design idea. Of course, that's... a huge advantage, and it's a huge plus to use the tool to visualize what you're thinking about. And it removes that barrier of if you are a good designer, maybe you're not a good 3D modeler, or if you can't tell what you exactly want with the words to whoever is trying to, or if you can't sketch with your hand. Right now, you have a tool that you can easily showcase, or you can easily play around and get closer to your ideas, get inspired by different styles, different architects, or mixture of them maybe, and create something that is more closer to you. And that could be exactly you and conveying you.
Actually, it's like crafting your own style, crafting your own approach. And what I find fascinating mostly is that, you know, I look at it as a virtual environment, like a mm-hmm. second version of our world, because Midjourney is actually trained on everything.
Yes.
And it's not like other software that are exclusively trained on architecture materials. It's trained on everything that we have in this world. And it's a virtual playground where you can experiment with anything that comes to your mind and play and iterate numerous times. And sometimes, you know, I look at words as ingredients and then I start blending and I blend them. Like I add two and then I add three, I add four. Sometimes I add like 10 words and then I start iterating. And sometimes they, you know, you reach something that it's nothing like you've ever seen before. Sometimes it happens. Like I can't recognize, I was doing something in fashion a few days ago and I came up with something. I was trying words like Persian architecture or maybe a technique in painting, like pointillism. It's a technique in painting. And I added colors, I added like kaleidoscopic effects, I added fractal fragmentations.
And these are the words you're adding, right?
Yeah, I look at them as ingredients and then I play with them. And the result turned out to be something I didn't recognize. Mm-hmm. Like you can develop something that I didn't share them. I was talking with my friend, actually. She's really good at Persian architecture. I told her that, look at it, tell me what this is. And she didn't recognize it. It's something that you don't know. I'm saying that you can create things that are novel and original with it. Mm-hmm. But you just need to be obsessive, experimental, and you need to try so many times.
You mentioned also about Iranian architecture and Iranian culture, Persian culture, and have being an Iranian like inspires you into your design explorations, and how does it feed you into the architecture or the type of the design that you're doing?
Well, it was actually something that I dealt with at the very beginning of my journey, because the very first images I created were inspired by, and a lot of people were asking, what is the prompt? And I said that I use Persian architecture, yeah.
Yeah, these ones, right?
Because this, you know, I play with things that I have obsessions over. Uh-huh. I've dealt with over a long time, and they're very crucial for me. I really think about them. I think that they're existential, like to my profession. And I really thought about how the Persian culture, the Persian architecture could contribute to the modern world. How can we use the motifs, use the traditional, even spatial configurations to create something that is modern? And I actually worked on a research project for spatial, because I wasn't at the beginning, I wasn't interested. I'm talking about my master's, during my master's degree. I wasn't interested in architecture in terms of decorations or ornamentations. But I studied, I actually worked on flexibility and flexible architecture. Mm-hmm. I did a research project on traditional houses in Iran. Mm-hmm. And we were trying to discover how this type of spatial configuration contributes to flexibility. And I studied their plans.
Flexibility and of
flexibility
what?
Of architecture.
Okay.
And do you know about flexibility?
Yes, I know stuff, but...
It was there that I got really fascinated with.
Maybe you can open up the topic of flexibility in architecture.
Yeah.
Do you mean reusability or type of?
Yeah, it has a lot of uses, or it's a vast topic. I studied and did research on it for, I think, 2 or 3 years. And I specifically worked in joining and division, like how two units could join. Like we have two 60 square meter units. How can they become a 120 meter units?
In a single unit.
Yeah, a single unit. And how they could even in the future divide and turn into. How you could do that with, you know, I love playing with spatial configurations. Or doing it's creative working like that, and I found that also really fascinating, working with spaces and how to play with spaces to come up with novel configurations.
Do you test it this also with AI, with Midjourney or
it's
anything?
It's not possible at the moment. I think I should learn algorithmic design. I think I should.
There's going to be a tool soon, Finch 3D out there.
Yeah, I've been waiting for that tool for a long time.
I met with the founder, Jesper Wahlgren. We had a meeting and he showcased what is going behind the tool that is developing. And they are also working on an AI tool that is embedded into Finch 3D. Basically, it was a plugin for Grasshopper before, and now it's a separate platform, but it is synced with Rhino and Grasshopper as well. And now they're working with some companies. But it's a great example. He showcased me lots of things, but it's a great example of the different configurations of spatial aspects of an architectural element that you can play with around, and you can.
Does it allow for creativity?
I'm not sure about that, but it gives you different options that you can explore, especially for architectural scale, with differentiation of, you know, the square meters and the largeness, smallness, the inside of, you know, the separation of spaces to each other and embedments to each other. If you want a 3-bedroom apartment or 4-bedroom apartment, it gives you different ideas with different plans, and you can easily work with that. And even if that tool is out there for everyone, which they're going to release it soon, we're going to have some collaborations probably to get it. That tool is going to help a lot for architects. You don't have to learn specifically algorithmic design. It's always good to learn computational and algorithmic design. It's period good. I told you that's why our academy is based on that. But yes, that tool will help a lot for architects. And I think it will be helping you a lot too, like you personally, to explore these configurations.
Options, yeah, because you know what I did.
But also Valacy is a great plugin for Grasshopper. That enables you to explore different type of, you know, configurations and settings and parameters that you can apply to a plan, for example.
Yeah.
But Valacy needs a little bit of knowledge on Grasshopper that you can use it.
Yeah, that's great. Because, you know, what I worked on was specifically related to residential architecture, and I designed a, like, 3 or 4 level building that could work in 9 different ways, like how the spaces could be connected horizontally and virtually, like joining two vertical units together, making a triplex, or then separating everything. And I came up with like 9 solutions.
And there are great typologies of those kinds of rooms. I don't know if you have seen some houses in Copenhagen or some houses in...
I studied all of them when I was doing, I studied a lot of books related to that.
Amsterdam or...
Yeah, but you know, when I was designing and developing these options, I thought that I'm thinking like a calculator. I'm calculating which option is good, which I'm defining some principles, and that's why I'm telling you that I might need to learn algorithmic design. I'm defining some principles, like all the units need to have an open area or a terrace, all of them need to have access to the south light, and then we can have one unit full, we can have half a unit, we can have 1.5 unit, we can have 2 units joined, 3 units joined, or maybe half a unit can separate and work as a commercial. I was exactly thinking like a computer. And I thought that maybe for my PhD, if I ever decided to study, pursue a PhD degree, I might work on it. But then I got into AI and went another way. But I'm thinking of maybe mixing the two in the future.
So what do you think of the effects of AI in the creative industry?
Well, some people are very negative.
What's going to be its future?
Pessimistic about it. I'm actually among the optimistic ones. I think that we're going to see an explosion. I'm among the people who think that way. An explosion of creativity, and it allows it allows room for personal expression, self-expression, and personalization, which I consider it a good thing. I don't like, I'm not sure if you've seen some units that all of the buildings are the same, and they're like, you know, when you're not, if you're not a communist, these problems happen because of lack of time in our profession. You don't have time to design every space specifically, or I think AI is going to help a lot with that. It's going to personalize, it's going to give you a lot of options that make each space unique in its own way.
On that note, I have a comment. I was talking to a good friend, and I don't want to mention her name. So she's also into AI, and she was we had this discussion together that how is AI developing and how offices and now professional practices are using it. There's a problem with AI that if everyone is using it, and probably it's going to generate the same typology of the buildings or same topology of the architecture if you're using it for a specific region. So the example of this is the competition that they was running in one location, and the client asked 10 companies to come up with new ideas, and most of them used Midjourney. For example, if you're typing design me something in the for something in the style of Egypt or something suitable for Egypt, it's obvious what you're going to get. Maybe some renderings close
generic.
To yeah,
they're
Hassan
generic.
Regab's works or some kind of these kind of visuals. And unfortunately, all the offices came up with the same typology of the ideas, and none of them were different, because the words that put inside the Midjourney were probably all inspired by the location of the site. And this is creating the same typology of the building, and this is not good. And then the client starts giving hints to a couple of the offices that everybody is doing like this. Please generate something else or work on some type of other type of projects, any other ideas that we haven't ever seen. So this is like a poison to the creativity as well. If you're using Midjourney too much or relying too much on the trained models, large language models, I don't know how it's going to be affecting the creative industry with all these problems that we can have. And I truly believe it's having a huge impact, a lot of positive impacts that you can explore different styles, you can jump from this tree to other tree. You can do many, many things. But also there are problems like this that we have to address them. And we have to talk about them. And we have to see what's the problem and find the ethics of it. So I know you're optimistic, but what's your view on this?
Well, I think that's where your professionalism, your expertise comes. Because I think that's actually how you can use it. You need to be familiar with the market to recognize if something's unique or if something's generic. You need to be in the market and study a lot of works to understand what you're seeing is generic or not. And I usually look for something that looks more unique.
But what is your uniqueness measurement? How do you measure if it is unique or not?
Well, I actually measure them with the quality. I talked about the quality of works in a session
in
that we had,
workshop,
PA
yeah.
Next. Yeah, I create works that have mixing qualities, developing something that has the qualities that I want in them. And there are some things that I'm specifically looking for. For example, I told you some of them when I was talking about the name Celeste.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm looking for those types of qualities. I'm looking for a feminine feature in my works. I think flip through my works, mm-hmm. it's evident from the very early days. I'm looking for a feminine touch, a feminine feature. And I do it in different ways. Sometimes I do it with soft forms or curves. Sometimes I do it with colors. Sometimes I do it with both of them. I want something whimsical, something that's unexpected. And I do that with thoughts. Like I describe what I want. I don't say that I want something whimsical.
Yeah.
I describe what I think is whimsical. Or if I'm developing something that is, I believe, futuristic, I don't type, give me a futuristic building. I describe what I think the future looks like. And I think I have a vision of what the future might look like. And I work on that. I work on my vision and describe what I think to develop, not just, you know, using the words futuristic or using the location.
What does future of architecture look like to you?
Well, I actually spent a lot of time on that understanding. And I also chose the vision for myself that it resonates with me, because the future doesn't, it's not all I see. This is one narrative. My narrative is only one of the millions. And when I tell people about
Tell me about that narrative.
Well, I studied a lot and I observed, I read a lot of books. You know, I told you when I was in the years of Corona, I started reading a lot of books, like in psychology, in economics, in future. I wanted to know what the future, and I also was observing trends. I wanted to know where we're going, and why are we going that way? And yeah, future is very creative and playful, I believe. And I believe that the architecture industry is going to move towards experiential design and playful design. Because, you know, creativity is going to be very important in the future. And it's not something only I believe. I read a lot of books that hint, like psychology hints to that. Books on personal development hint to that. Work hint to that. Economics and creativity is a human feature that's going to become very important in the future. And creativity evolves with spaces that are not very, very serious. You know, when you feel comfortable.
So you think creativity is not a AI feature that we can use? It's human creativity?
I think that
AI can't be creative.
It can be. But there are levels, I believe.
Okay.
Because when you're asking AI to, for example, create a home that looks like a mouse, for example,
yes.
It does it in some way, in some random way. But does it, do you accept this? Do you want this? Like,
of course.
It is creating something. It is creating something. But I believe that how humans think, AI still can't do that, because humans work on emotions. They work on experiences, they have nurture, education, and I work on things that I'm really obsessed with, I really, really care about.
Mm-hmm.
And I use my education, I use my experience, how I was how I was raised actually influences my work, how I was educated influences my work. I think at the moment, I'm not sure about the future. I don't know how it's gonna end up. But at the moment, I think humans are the drivers. That's actually the reason why I named our next workshop Creative Direction.
Creative Direction, yeah.
Because I think that designers need to elevate themselves from designers to design directors, to creative directors, art directors. They need to elevate themselves. It doesn't mean that they don't need to know design. They need to know how to design, but they don't need to do it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They need to know, but they don't need to do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I believe that the role will somehow change from design assistant to design director. So you need to know, you need to have a vision. You need to know how to differentiate yourself. And I believe these are going to be important, because AI is a tool that helps you self-express, express yourself. And I wanted to mention something about what you said about humans relying heavily on AI. And I also believe that that should not happen. And I still think that we still need to use our traditional tools like pens and pencils. And it's not always, it doesn't always work developing something with AI. And it doesn't actually create what we have in our mind. When you have something really clear in your mind, AI can't help you. Your hand can help you. And what I usually recommend to people, to students, is just look at it as a tool and don't rely heavily on it. Definitely test it, definitely work on it, but don't leave out your traditional tools like pencils or pens or drawing skills. They might become less important in the future. That I'm not sure of, because I think the moment we need to stop working with pencils is the moment that you can actually edit with your hand what AI does. Like, you can draw on it and edit on it, something like that. I don't know how it might become in the future, but you need to have control like that type of control. And at the moment, it doesn't offer that type of control. And I find that really annoying sometimes. Yeah. So yeah, I think that what happens between human and AI, it needs to be a contribution. It needs to be a collaboration, not a human heavily relying on AI. But a human looking at it as a tool to develop avenues that might be too slow for them to develop with hand. And sometimes you might reach what you want, but sometimes you might not. So if you can't reach what you want, you need to create it with your hand. So
yeah, well, obviously the personal experience and thoughts and everything that you have lived is affecting whatever you're generating, whatever you're writing. That's you that are typing, and that's you that is putting together all these words to combine some stuff and generate exactly. through these models. I absolutely believe that, and your work is one of the great examples of this.
Yeah, I believe that if you want to create novel, original works, you need to go outside your realm. I believe that is really important. Mm-hmm. So if you want to create something original, you need to, in architecture, you need to go outside the realm of architecture and start getting inspirations from different areas. That's why I told you I like hanging out with people, with non-architects.
Yes, yes. because they also add different type of view to your
exactly.
views.
Yeah, exactly. They change your worldview.
Yes.
And
some of them ending up giving some works to you, and they become your clients. If you're friends with just architects, you're gonna lead nowhere, because the architects won't give you any work.
Yeah.
But if you have friends from other industries, they're gonna be someday your client.
Yeah.
So what inspires you in daily life while you're working, actually? What drives you? What gets you something new into your mind? Okay.
It's hard. Well, I have a very wide range of interests. I'm a person who likes a lot of things. And I collect them.
You love fashion design.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I went into fashion. I used to collect everything I loved since like 13, 14 years ago. And I think it's very helpful for designers to gather inspiration. I gather natural objects, mm-hmm. natural ideas that come from nature. I mean, I'm into objects, I'm into interiors. I love studying historical, but I'm mostly familiar with Persian. And that I also, I'm not a professional at it. Some people are very, very knowledgeable on that stuff. I don't consider
Persian
myself.
Persian architecture, you mean?
Yeah, yeah. I don't consider myself that kind of knowledgeable, but I worked and did research on spatial configurations of residential Persian, traditional Persian architecture. And I love studying historic architecture. And, coming up with ideas is hard. It's not easy. That's why I've stopped working. Because at some moment, you feel like you're empty and I don't have any more ideas to work on. Sometimes it feels like that. And but you know, I don't have any ideas to work on in architecture, but some idea comes to me and I for fashion or for objects, and then I start I'm working nonstop but on different paths, on different avenues. And yeah, I recently got into fashion. That was actually, it was not intended, it was not planned how I got into it. I wasn't planning to enter the fashion world. But I was invited to speak on an event about the influence of generative AI on fashion design. That made me do research on the topic. And I understood that this disruption that is going to take place in all industries is going to hit, it's going to hit all professions, that's for sure. But some professions sooner than others. And marketing and fashion are among the ones that are going to get hit first. They're going to get disrupted first. And they're a lot less complicated than architecture. The fashion is a lot faster than architecture. Architecture is very heavy, very slow. And the people working in it are very conservative, actually. That was one reason. The other reason was that I saw my perspective missing from the market. So I have an idea, I don't see it. And they say, when you don't see what you think is beautiful, create it. And that's what I did. And I got positive feedback from people. They liked my work. They wanted me to do more. And then, I started working. And
then you got some projects, right? As a fashion designer.
I have been developing actually some. I've been receiving some proposals for work. One is with an emerging brand. Another is an already established brand. And
that's cool.
Developing the team that I can work with, that is actually a challenging.
So you're looking to hire people?
Yeah.
What kind of people you're looking for?
I'm looking for a person who knows how to design 3D. We actually have the people because one of my friends works at university and she has students under and they know the software.
Also students from our academies maybe.
I think I need to find the right people to work with, both in architecture and in other areas as well. Mm-hmm. In architecture, I'm specifically looking for people who can help me develop the ideas further, maybe take them one step further from an image or from just some images to a more, developed, more detailed space, maybe 3D that might have some function, develop them in a functional form. I started with the idea of developing a business, building a business around what I do. And I believe that fashion is going to be the first one to take off.
Nice. Yeah, looking forward to it. Yeah. Interesting.
I've been receiving, because I developed a few couture works, very formal dresses. And I've been receiving
offers
to specifically for Cannes or for
Cannes Film Festival.
Yeah, that one for women, girls, Miss World. Yeah, Miss World 2020.
Miss Universe.
Yeah, 2024. Developing, for example, one of the misses.
Nice. Yeah, we're gonna see your design on the stage then.
Yeah. And for fashion weeks also, for Paris Fashion Week, for Milan Fashion Week.
Oh, impressive.
What I was doing at first, I was developing like tiny sculptures, miniature, like some intersection between architecture and sculpture at the beginning, those tiny models. In fashion also, it is somehow sculptural. Mm-hmm. And also, you see some unexpected like fabric, unexpected forms. And I played with Persian motifs, mm-hmm. and Persian architecture, Persian textures.
Has any of your project has been fabricated?
No. Or? You know, some of them are very complex, but we are working on some of them.
But the first versions that you were doing, yes, they were super complicated. But the recent ones that you're posting,
yeah.
they're high quality ones. Yeah. They are high quality ones, for example. These ones are super
I received
complicated.
A lot of, yeah.
How you're going to build this? Or?
They wanted it for their wedding.
Yeah. Oh, for the wedding?
Yeah, they wanted it for their wedding. And I received a lot of requests that, do you have it? Do you develop it? I didn't think that this would create some hype like that. But it was shared on a lot of pages on Instagram.
But I see the developments, like these are the type of the stuff that are
These are buildable. Possible. Yeah, these are possible. Easily buildable. Yeah. Like you can fund them.
You can fabricate.
Some are buildable, but are hard to fund, and mm-hmm, they mm-hmm. require a lot of money to put into the develop address, yeah. and they require experiment because. It is like developing new architecture. When mm-hmm. you're developing new architecture, you need to experiment a lot, and it's
yeah. These yeah. are the stuff that could yeah. be easily 3D printed yeah. or something.
Yeah.
Who's your favorite designer or architect that you always, for example, inspire from?
Well, I have a lot of favorites.
You have a long list for
yeah,
everything.
Yeah, I have a lot. I think that's an advantage and a disadvantage at the same time. It's an advantage because I have a large pool to yes. draw from. And that's why I'm here. Because it when you have a large idea pool, you can blend uh-huh. more ideas and you can come up with more creative uh-huh. stuff. But it's also a disadvantage because it might, you know, it doesn't let you focus on something. Mm-hmm. I go different directions.
Tell me a couple of names.
Well, old or new.
Anyone. Any names that you get inspired from.
Well, my favorite architect is actually Le Corbusier.
Okay.
Yeah, I loved his innovation, his style, and he actually... did a lot of things. Mm-hmm. He did paintings, he did sculpture.
Contributions yeah. to modern architecture.
And also yeah. he did spatial configurations, he did urban projects. Mm-hmm. I really love his, you know, whatever I study I go into, I hear his name. Mm-hmm. There, he has a work on it. And it's oh, yeah. really fascinating to me. How can someone be this productive? How can someone be this innovative and this, you know, widely experimenting on so many things? And yeah, I really find that interesting.
So what's next for Celeste Design? And you're also doing some fashion work. What is next for your career?
Well, the first step would be designing the website. Developing the website that I've been thinking about in a year, because I don't want it to be some generic. I want it to be designer made, and I want to do design kind of stuff, like fashion design or object design mm-hmm. or architecture or interior design. So mostly covering design stuff. And we are in fashion design, we are already developing a few products, a few clothes and dresses. And we're gonna produce them and sell them. And maybe start with some easier ones and then move to more complex, more expensive ones. And yeah, I think that this is how I'm gonna start. At the moment, in fashion, I'm going to go that way. In architecture, I'm going to start working on developing and pushing some projects further with mm-hmm. a few people. So that's the next step in architecture. And also continuing developing ideas, if any ideas occur to me. That is also really important.
So you aim to also have some influence and to Iranian fashion industry and present them as a new trend of, you know, global trend of fashion design.
I really hope to do that.
Inspired by Persian culture, yeah. Iranian culture. And
like make it global. Make it universal, yeah.
Then start a fashion brand. So what do you think about PA and parametric architecture and PA Academy?
That's
Maybe you
hard.
Can share it.
Well, I actually like you. I'm working with you. It's obvious that I like you. Yeah, I think it's very necessary that we have such academies or organizations that actually work on, you know, new emergent technologies and bring awareness to people about how these tools might work, how these tools actually work, because I think a lot of people actually don't know how AI works. And I sometimes find it really annoying to explain to everyone that this is not how it works, and it's something else. And such organizations can actually help bring awareness to to the public.
Yeah.
And also educate the young how to use these tools.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely true. And we've been trying to do to educate as much as we can, bringing pioneers in our platform and try to spread the knowledge and give the knowledge accessible by everyone who is enthusiastic and they want to learn, and distribute this information among architects so they can use it in more effective way. And also, it also enables us to discover new talents and bring them to the platform and give them exposure, because good work deserves exposure and good works needs publication and to be published and to be seen, to be appreciated. And that's our main duty, what we do in PA and also PA Academy.
Yeah, that's great.
Well, on that note, I'm going to go towards my final question, and what kind of advice would you like to give to young professionals and young designers?
Well, I would say not stop, do not stop learning. That's what I do, actually. I always try to stay up to date. It's impossible to keep up in this world if you don't stay up to date. So don't stop learning, always keep up with the new technologies, try new technologies, see what works for you. And also about exposure, I think I have a say on that, because I was really uncomfortable with exposure at the beginning.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Why?
Really uncomfortable. I don't know, I'm an introvert. And
you didn't want to people know you personally.
I found
and...
it really, really hard to expose myself. I don't know why. Maybe because I thought that I might be heavily judged. I don't know. But after some time, my thought was wrong. I found out that people were actually found me and my thoughts and my ideas more inspirational or influential than heavily judging me. And I learned that, and I learned a lot by feedback.
Yeah.
And the feedback actually
carved
my
path.
Yeah,
of course.
And exposure developed my path and how I need to, you know, iterate and work towards what I need to work towards. So for people who are like me, who are afraid of exposure or public speaking, definitely give that a chance. And I really found it hard, believe me. These hairs that you see are white. I grew them white in this 1 year.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it was because I felt a lot of pressure for that, but now it's becoming normal.
Yeah
So for people who are like me, I guess it would really, really help them to expose themselves, to share their ideas with the world. It could help the world and it could help them. As a creator, you have the potential to be a trendsetter. You have the potential to introduce to the world something that they didn't even think was possible or was beautiful. So as a creator, I think my advice to young generation would be to be a trendsetter, not a trend follower. You can be a trend follower sometimes. I think it's very important to analyze trends before you jump onto them. Analyze them, whether they make sense, whether they're not a passing fad. So then you know, you can go towards them.
Well, thank you so much, Aida. Thank you. This is really nice to have you in the platform, and you've been growing as an emerging talent and as an AI designer, of course, and your works are so inspiring. And I appreciate your time for educating the next generation and whatever you know about AI, and however you're working, you're teaching them you're uncovering the tool, and you're teaching them in the best way possible, and you're inspiring them. Well, thank you so much for everything that you do. I appreciate your time and also coming to our office.
Thank you so much. It's been great. Nice.
Guys, thank you so much for watching the episode. I hope you enjoyed it a lot. Again, I want to spotlight Pacademy, an online architectural educational platform that spreads the idea of using parametric design, computational tools, and artificial intelligence in architecture. You can register and join the live workshops or watch the previous studio workshops recordings. Don't forget to subscribe and hit the bell notification so you don't miss any new uploads. Thank you so much for watching the episode. Hope to see you soon in the future episodes.